All right, let's put the microphone here in between.
So I'm going to start this episode myself because we have an announcement, which is that Matt just broke a world record. He's the first person in the entire planet, probably, most probably, to go record a podcast with his keys at 8 p.m. If you know another person who's done that, then reach out to us, but I think that he's the only one. Then now you speak because I'm not good at making intros, so yeah, that's it.
Well, that was pretty good already. Thank you very much. So today we have a special episode because it's not in our current theme. Usually the podcast is called Up on Foil, yeah, and we talk all about foiling. And with you, it's not that much about foiling because, yeah, you've been on foil, but you're usually not. So it's kind of an antithesis, and we're not having it in the real order. It would be episode 19, but it's a winter special.
Okay.
And it's perfect because
quite topical, yeah. Right. So we sit here in surrounded by about 2 meters of snow.
Exactly. So we're here in Grindelwald, and we're here with Aaron, Aaron Kitesurf.
Kitesurf Aaron,
yeah. And he's probably been in all of our streams. And I've come to know you as the guy who trains to put on a wetsuit.
Yeah. Funny. A lot of people know that video.
Yeah, right. And then I went a little deeper and I found out you're like an OG in kitesurfing. Or at least that's what I found out. You're a content creator. And well, thank you for having us here in your kitchen.
No worries.
Super cool.
You're welcome.
So I would really like to get to know you. Yeah. And maybe you can tell us first, what are you doing? Someone who wants to be on the water, what are you doing in the mountains?
I know, it's a bit painful, I'll tell you. There is a story to all of this. So I started kitesurfing in the year 2000. I'm from Switzerland originally, but I have lived in New Zealand since 2010. Yeah, so for the majority of the time I was in New Zealand. And I recently came back to Switzerland about a year ago. Because I have two kids and I want them to learn German. It's not because of the wind, I promise you that, man. Because you don't get to kite a lot here in the mountains. yeah
that is true. Yeah. And we actually wanted to go for a little snow kite session.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, no wind, but maybe we can do that some other time.
No surprise to me, but yeah.
But then again, why did you come deep in the mountains?
Well, when we were looking at coming back, this is anyway just a temporary thing. We still have a house in New Zealand, and plan is to move back once we are comfortable that the kids can speak the language. But the reason I went and lived in, like, chose Grindelwald, which is a little tiny village in the Swiss Alps, is because I just needed something different. I couldn't go back to a city in Switzerland or anything of that. I needed a bit of a kick, something special. So we're surrounded by 4,000 meter high mountains. We're in 1,000 looking at 4,000 meter tall mountains. It's a pretty spectacular place. Zero wind.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Amazing. But you didn't grow up here.
No.
Where did you grow up?
Zurich.
All Zurich. Right.
The way that how you'd pronounce it in Swiss German. Yeah.
I have to say that it's pretty impressive what you did, like, just for your kids to learn German. Can I ask you, why is it so important for you that they learn German?
You know, it's totally a selfless, is that the word? Decision, because my life was absolutely perfect in New Zealand. Like, I was kiting 2 to 4 times a week. Good job. Everything was perfect. Like, there was no reason to leave. But deep down, I just wanted to give my kids the opportunity, because they have the Swiss passport, because I'm Swiss, that they could come here if they wanted to when they're older. So that was the only reason, man. And I've been suffering. I'm telling you, you might not even notice that on Instagram, because now I'm using all the time that I used to spend on the water to create content and stay in touch with everyone, basically. But inside, man, I'm dying. I'm not kiting as much as I really want to at the moment, but it's temporary.
How was your life in New Zealand? What did you do for a job?
So I was a... No one will guess that, but I was a bank manager, all right, leading a team of 15 people in the bank for many, many years. So completely the opposite to my comedian sides that I'm finally found an outlet on Instagram to let loose this thing that was inside me all this time. As a bank manager, at the very beginning, I managed a branch far away from the ocean. I had a 9-to-5. I always had a 9-to-5, but I basically, it still meant I couldn't actually go out a lot on the water. And that was kind of the idea why I moved to New Zealand, to just kite and kite and kite as much as I possibly could. But it ended up being probably once a week, if I was lucky, if the timing was right with the weekends, you know, it was not ideal. But then towards the end of my stay, the last 2-3 years, I managed to secure a branch close to the ocean, which meant like I could do an hour lunch break kite session. I was 1 minute from my office, I could see the ocean.
Wow.
And sometimes in the morning at 6 o'clock until 7:30 before work, or once I even like went for a lunch break session, left the kite pumped up on the beach, and I came back 4 hours later at 5, had another half an hour, rushed to the daycare, picked up my 2 kids.
Nice.
So it was a pretty, pretty epic life. And the other thing as well, New Zealand is so isolated, but we do have a few good riders, namely Mark Jacobs and Hugo Wigglesworth. They were out there quite a bit. And it's just cool to ride with people, watch them, what they do, you know, and just learn from them. Yeah.
How did they react when you told them you're going to go to Switzerland, to the mountains, and leave them there?
I wasn't like too close with them personally. Okay. And I didn't actually tell a lot of people. We just sort of, you know, in our head was just like, oh, let's just go to Switzerland for a year. It's time away. I think people were stoked, you know. Change is good sometimes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's go into the start of your kite surf life. Why or how did you get to the water? How did you start kite surfing? Because back then it was dangerous. It was not easy.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah. So I was 12 years old, year 2000. I had saved enough money to buy a new bike. I went to the bike store and just kind of, you know, as a 12-year-old, starting to like look at the bikes I want to buy. And then there was the TV was on with Eurosport, and they had a kite surf competition, year 2000.
Wow.
And I was just like, I was mesmerized. I just looked at the screen. I was like, I need to do that. I want to do that. And then I went online, 2000, the old dial-up internet things, and I bought a kite online.
Really?
That was possible, man. A gun sail kite, a two-line kite, a foil kite, that when you dump it in the water, it sank. It literally you could not afford to sink that thing. And when you let loose, the kite would literally, the safety leash was attached to your wrist, the kite would just like, keep turning in the air. It literally dragged me through the field once. In the air until it hit the tree. And that was just insane.
That's terrifying.
My God. Yeah.
But and that nothing was... ever happened?
No.
All right.
No,
good.
No.
Good.
I mean, a year later, the four line kites arrived. Mm-hmm. That was a game changing thing. Although actually looking back, they didn't really depower a lot. But then, you know, you learn how to control a kite without depower, meaning like you just have to move it really low in the wind window and push against it in a gust. And so that stuff really still helps, you know.
Super technical, huh?
Yeah. Super fun. Yeah.
Do you still have that kite, that first one?
Not the first one, but I think the second one. But it did actually, it was an ARX, Nash ARX, and it popped as I tried to blow it up. So it's,
Wow. And the board is probably huge compared to now.
Man, it was a directional board. It was about 2 meters long, as a New Zealand brand, Supersession. And you had to learn how to jibe, which was a very frustrating part. When you just learn how to kite, and then you need to, like, jibe. I mean, on the foil these days, you still have to do that, right? Jibing, unless you right switch. But it's a similar sort of challenge that I had to, everyone had to go through at the very beginning.
Wow. But you're still right. You're still kite surfing. You're not that much on foil, but you've tried it.
Oh yeah. I have a foil. Yeah. I have a race foil, an Axis race foil in New Zealand. I did take it out actually quite a bit in low wind, like 10 knot sort of days. Oops, did I press something?
No worries, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then let's just...
yeah, I took it out. My foiling story was like that. I saw people start foiling in New Zealand stuff. I wasn't really intrigued. But then I saw one guy, Mark, he's my friend now. He did some cool stuff, like sitting down on the foil, 360s. And I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm quite competitive, you know. Before, like, seeing the people just go backwards and forwards wasn't too interesting. But I saw this guy doing tricks. I was like, I need to do that. Like, I have to. I'm competitive, you know. And so I bought a foil and then learned how to do all this stuff, you know, like sitting down, which is a pretty cool feeling, like just sitting down, chilling on the
sitting
water.
Sitting down is one thing. Getting back up is more difficult, I think.
Yes. I can't do that, actually. I mean, I've tried a thousand times, I think, but that's difficult. I usually cut the video before that point, so it looks cool, you know.
Yeah, you know how to do. We're going to come to that later on. Did you bring all your kite gear with you when coming here?
Nah, I just brought two kites, my 9 and 12, and a board. Yeah. Yeah. And I've since had some kites stripped to me.
I've seen that.
Yeah. People know about my kite life. Eh? Which I still haven't. I haven't even unpacked the kite. It's still sitting in my garage.
No. Don't you have like some lakes there in Zurich, close to the Italian border, where there are quite a few kite foilers?
Yes, we do have lakes. Most of them, I would say, I call them Löhlisee. You know what that means in German?
Yes.
Yeah, like not enough wind for my style, like 20 knots kind of kiting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe you correct me because... Yeah.
No, I mean, it always depends what you're comparing it to.
Yeah.
But I have nothing else.
Yeah.
Like Neuchâtel. If there's westerly winds or easterly,
and
you get it on forecast. You know, next week on Thursday, there's going to be wind the whole day, and that's what I think pretty cool. But of course, compared to the ocean, that's
the thing. I like. That's another thing why I chose Grindelwald, because like once you're used to the good life, like we're talking. I just looked at the forecast now, actually, in New Zealand, just out of curiosity. You have about 4 days this current week of 20 knots in sunshine in New Zealand. And so when you're used to that four times a week, 20 knots, 22 knots, 23 knots, you know, and then you're like, okay, you might get a day every 10 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I'm not going to move to that lake just to score that one day in 2 or 3 weeks, you know, that's why I thought, you know what, I'm not even going to focus on kiting right now. I'm going to focus on the mountain life. Not right now, snowboarding. In summer, it's hiking. I fly a lot of airplanes too. And just basically, just completely stop kiting for a bit.
I get it, except when you're on vacation.
Yeah.
Right. And you've done some incredible vacation from what I've seen. And maybe you can come into that crazy create your life. And first of all, the last one that I saw was on that cruise ship, looked super luxury stuff.
Yeah, that was nice.
How did you find that? How is that financed? I mean, it looks super expensive.
Yeah. So it's a kite safari.
Maybe,
in Egypt.
Tell us what
so,
it was.
I mean, it's a kite safari in Egypt. It's a boat that can host about, I think, 25 people. And I actually started kite surfing with a guy called Marco in the year 2000 or 2001 in Silla Plana. And then we lost touch for 20 years.
Yeah.
And through this Instagram, me going a little bit viral sometimes, a lot of people have reached out to me. Old friends reconnecting was super cool. He was one of these guys, Marco, and he owns Big Days Kite Safaris, which is the brand that runs these kite safaris down in Egypt. And I mean, I've known him since 2001, and he just said, hey, you should come to my boat, you know, come and, you know, we do some cool content together and stuff. And that was my first sort of taste of what it could feel like to be a professional kite surfer, you know, like you go somewhere, you film content. That, like, it was an incredible boat. The crew was super supportive. I said to them, yeah, I want to jump off the boat. Boom, four people helping me with the kite, you know, camera, the guy was flying the drone. It was just nuts, man. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, actually, like, what I later on found out, I mean, it's kind of a luxurious experience,
yeah,
but it's not that expensive. I think if you book it early enough with early bird discount, you can get it for like 1,200 bucks, maybe 1,500
for a week,
for 1 week. That's like your stay plus the flight, which is another like 400 or 500 bucks. Yeah, so it's not cheap, but I mean,
the hotel is not far off. Depending on
my goodness,
hotel,
right? It is such a nice experience, man. Because like everyone in the boat, they're kiters. Yeah. Everyone has the same goal. You just talk about wind sport, kiting. You get up in the morning early. You know, everyone goes out kiting. Kite for 2-3 hours in the morning, go eat lunch, go again, kite until sunset, nice. Completely, dead on the boat, drinking beer, having some good conversations. Next thing you repeat, you know, that's a fantastic experience. Yeah.
So you would do that again. You would go there again.
100%. My God. Yeah. I've already been talking. I was like, please let me come back. And I think I'm going to go in April. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Very cool.
And how long are you going to stay in Switzerland for before coming back to New Zealand?
Yeah, the plan, it's a good question. We don't know that. We don't know that. We need to see. The kind of plan is maybe end of the 2025 to go back to New Zealand. And in between, we're probably going to, my wife's just Brazilian.
Yeah.
And so we're probably going to spend 2-3 months, hopefully in Brazil and kite there a bit. And hopefully there I can fuel up all the time on the water that I've been missing. Yeah.
Makes sense. She's a kiter too.
She kites sometimes. Yeah. She can kite. Yeah. Yeah. She likes surfing. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So that's actually a challenge, man. If anyone in the world could recommend a spot that is really good for surfing, like beginner to intermediate, and really good for kiting, that perfect balance, we haven't found that yet, huh? Because we are looking for a sort of a new spot to kind of base ourselves. We're both are happy.
Yeah. As soon as you have it, it's going to be full.
Yeah.
All right. And then you decide, when did you decide to make videos? I scrolled down your timeline and I couldn't find the end really. When was that?
I started my Instagram channel maybe 2-3 years ago, but I wasn't too serious about it. I just uploaded a few videos. Mainly the reason I started this channel was to help people learn the board off.
Yep.
Because for 20 years, I thought this trick was too hard. And I thought only pros can do this trick. And then suddenly I committed to this journey, basically.
Yep.
Trained also off the water. And within a month, I landed the trick. And then I wanted to share that with the people. So if you go all the way to the very bottom, you'll see some board of tips and tricks. But it didn't really take off my Instagram.
Yeah.
Only in June this year, I posted a video and it had like 20,000-30,000 views. And that was quite a lot for me at the time. And then I was like, wow, this is crazy, you know? And then I've posted more. And then I had a viral one, 1 million view. I did another one.
Which one was that?
Which one was the first one? I think my first real viral one was where I did the board off. What are you training for?
Yeah.
The board off, the teabag, where I chose this video of this Swiss kiter doing this beautiful teabag in Lake Silaplana. And I just, made fun of it, basically, that I'm practicing for it.
Yeah.
And that went pretty viral. And then I was like, wow, this is crazy, you know? And I did another one. And then I had a few viral videos, hey? And I started having really a lot of fun doing it.
But you didn't expect them to go that viral.
I mean, when I had my first real viral video, I was like, hey, I'm going to do that again. Yeah. And then it was another viral one. I was like, what's going on? Like I actually felt at the time that somehow Instagram picked me up, the algorithm, and just favored me and just showed me to more people. And I was like, I need to ride this wave. Yeah. And I did. And I managed to grow quite a bit. So, yeah.
But I mean, the wetsuit one—it's so relatable. Did you plan it in advance, or the first you got the viral video and you said, "All right, how can I do something similar, maybe?"
Yeah.
And then you just, how do you come up with that?
So, the thing is like that, because I've been doing this for 20 years plus the sport, I know exactly every single pain point. I've gone through everything, you know, like the no wind, the go to the beach and you forget your bar or your pump. And I mean, every possible scenario happened to me. And the wetsuit one, that one, actually my partner, she always, every time we go surfing, she's like, oh my God, this is so difficult. And I don't actually find it so hard. I've sort of medium, you know, but she just struggles a bit. And I thought, you know what, I'll do a video about that, you know. And then I did that. And that's probably my most popular video, I think, to date. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of feedback from all over the world?
Yeah. You know, I mean, most people always say, oh, exactly like Luke, so relatable. Yeah. It's exactly how I feel and stuff. I mean, my audience is usually like America, Germany, and generally Europe. That's my audience, yeah. And I get quite a bit of feedback. I mean, I try to, when I do these videos, I have a philosophy. I want to do something relatable, that is shareable, and repeatable. So if, you know, if I have a good idea, then I can do it again, kind of thing. Yeah.
And that's exactly the secret sauce to produce a good video, actually. Something that resonates, something that people can share between each other, something fun, because at the end of the day, especially on Instagram, people are just there to chill out and to have fun. Yeah. You're doing absolutely, absolutely good.
Thank you.
And do you want to take it to somewhere? Because I'm pretty sure that after your explanation, it started out of nowhere. But now, do you have like some goals?
That's a good question, man. You know, like, as I said to you before, like, I kind of fell into this Instagram thing. And then suddenly I was like, man, I got to stay with it. You know, I posted one video a day during the summer season here and grew quite a bit. And it takes a lot of work. Like, I spend an hour to 2 hours every single day.
Really?
Yeah. To these video ideas. Some of them are film videos. I've never posted them, or I posted them and I realized they're not good, so I've deleted them again. So you need a goal for it to be worth it, right? Like, you cannot just spend 2 hours a day for the rest of your life, because I don't get any money from Instagram. I got, yes, a free trip, or not a free trip, but a really a good deal on a trip to Egypt now with this boat, and a few other small things, but it does not really pay for the hours that I put in,
obviously. Yeah.
And I now started thinking quite a bit. It's like, you know, what can I do? I don't want to sell t-shirts like everyone else. You know, I
want
a mug or something. I mean, it's cool if it's a cool image, but I just wanted to do something that maybe I can even help people in a different way. And I came to the conclusion that back to why I started this Instagram is I started exercising at home and I learned this board off. And so I know quite a bit about board offs. And so I put together an app, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I put an app together that is an exercise app with exactly the right exercises that you can do from home, 15 minutes a day, no equipment needed. Basically, the philosophy is that you train when there is no wind, so that you can land your dream trick when there is wind. And I'm about to launch this app next year. Yeah.
All right.
So
I'm you just have a name or anything you want to share?
I do, but it's actually, no, not yet. Not really.
So we have to follow your account, kitesurf_Aaron, to find out when it launches.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
So that will be my first sort of, product out there.
Super exciting.
And I hope that it really helps people to land their board offs. I'd love to see the general level of kiting be a bit higher, you know? Yeah. I went to Hawaii recently, like last year. And every time I go to spots, most of the spots, I'm always just surprised how people just go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. No one tries stuff, you know? So I'd love to raise the bar a little bit, you know?
And you're doing crazy stuff, like walking up buildings and jumping off of them.
Yeah, that's actually not me.
Oh, that's not you.
No, that's not me. That's
you're just training for it.
That's some clever editing there. Yeah. I saw that video of this guy. I did link him in the description.
All right.
I always give credits to the people. Well, but right. I saw that. It's like, man, that's cool. You know, I want to share that. And usually, when I do videos, I think most people don't mind if I share their stuff because it's kind of like advertising for them,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah. So I've never had any complaints of people saying, hey, don't use my video. You know? Yeah.
How? You said that you plan a lot. You work 1 to 2 hours a day for that. Do you have like folders where you have ideas you want to do of videos? Because the ones I saw that you did on that cruise, you had to bring a lot of stuff from home and film stuff maybe afterwards or maybe even before you went there.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of logistics.
Yeah. I plan everything ahead, yeah. I literally have on my phone, I can show you. I have my... real ideas, second on the list, because I keep adding to it. And these are all my ideas that I still want to film. I haven't filmed it yet. I mean, if he's going to see that, there's a lot of ideas. These bullet points.
That is, score that fast. Is cool. Or people are going to steal your ideas.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a super high resolution here. But if you listen to it, you can also watch it on YouTube. So maybe you can find
one or two
good ideas. But now you have this list. And then you say, all right, I'm going to film that. Do you have someone who helps you with filming or do you everything by yourself?
I have two assistants. One is the tripod and one is my wife. Yeah. Now I film most of it. Yeah. Alone here. Yeah, basically. And you know, the crazy thing is when you don't have wind, like I live here in the mountains, 2 hours away from Lake Neshetil, or 1.5 hours away. Like, and you want to create tight content. I was surprised myself how much you can do at home.
Yeah.
Like it's insane.
You have a lot of those. Yeah.
Like, and a lot of the popular videos are the ones that I did at home, you know?
Yeah.
And that blew my mind, you know? You just have to stretch your imagination a bit.
Exactly.
When you're limited, you cannot go to the beach. And I sit there sometimes thinking, oh, I was like, that would be a good one, but I can't go kiting. So how could I, you know, present that in a funny way and relatable ways?
Yes. And one of your points under your handle is making kite surfers laugh. So, I used to kite surf. I don't anymore. And then I saw this this video where you said, well, there's someone who wings. That's cool. And then you change to para wing. And then it's kind of the other way around. What would it take for you to go wing foiling?
You know, it's actually quite a funny thing. There's a background story to these types of videos that I post.
Yeah.
Because I tried wing foiling once or twice. I tried it. I couldn't get up. I think my friend had too small of a board. It didn't float properly. But I'd be open to it. I think right now I just have two kids, you know. I mean, now I live up here in the mountains. But once I go back to the ocean, I think if I have a bit more time, one thing that really intrigues me with wing foiling is riding out in a big swell day. Yeah. Just holding the wing and just gliding in, you know, it's kind of like powder snowboarding, you know.
It feels similar. Yeah. Really. Plus, and then if you can do it with the paddle, which is, I'm struggling, but trying to do that.
That would be cool.
That's really, really like, and it's not a mountain that stops. I mean, these guys, they foil down like Neuchâtel, which is like 42 kilometers. So that's a long hill going down.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's cool. You know, and you know, the reason I post sometimes a bit of these edgy jokes against foilers, there is a reason to this, because it's not that I don't like foilers, but it's because when I first time I copied a sort of a format that I've seen on a mountain bike channel. I think about three ways how to be a happier wing foiler.
Yeah.
Buy a kite, fly a kite, sell your wing foiling gear.
Yeah.
I kind of stole that idea from a mountain biking channel or something. And I just thought it was a funny idea, you know?
Yeah,
that was my first video sort of about wing foiling. And that went off like crazy. 600,000 views.
Wow.
People were commenting. And I was like, and then actually that video, some people, they commented saying like, go, Aaron, exactly. Like, these wing foilers. And I was like, whoa, was like, I don't actually see it this way. You know, I was like, I just thought it was a funny idea, you know? But I actually figured out that there's some kiters that really don't like wing foilers. Yeah. Right? And anyway, kind of gets the comments going. But if you want to teach me one day, I'd be keen. Yeah.
Hey, look, you're a bit taller than I am. So yeah. You probably need a bigger board, I still have stuff. But we said that we're going to one day go to Lake Toon and do a little pump foil session.
Yes.
That is. Have you ever tried that?
I tried it once, yeah, with Lucas Walton, the guy who did the Olympic foiling, the race foiler for New Zealand. And it was cool. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. I managed to pump a few times, but man, it's a very good... It's a leg burner, that one, huh? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. God is actually the pro of us three.
That's really...
What's your max time?
I think I did like 5 minutes, so really not a pro. But now I'm focusing on smaller and smaller foils. I'm more on that side than a marathoner, let's call it.
Man, like talking about foils, like one thing that I really love to get into is that surf foiling, pedaling.
Yeah. Prone foiling?
Prone foiling, yeah.
Yeah.
That looks cool, man. Yeah,
100%.
That looks challenging.
That's my goal too.
Yeah,
probably not here though. Probably back in New Zealand.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
That is pretty cool. So go ahead, guys.
Speaking about New Zealand, besides wind, how were the conditions there, like wave wise? Because like you are a kite surfer, kite boarder. What do you prefer?
Yeah, for me, I definitely twin tip. I like my favorite tricks to do are the Jesus walk, just that feeling, taking the board off and sliding over water, board offs and stuff. So twin tip is my go-to. But New Zealand has a, like where I lived in Auckland, I had two flat water spots within 3 minutes of drives.
Yeah.
Nice. Like one east spot and one southwest spot, like both wind directions within 3 minutes from my house. I literally lived in the middle. So I did quite a bit of flat water riding. The spot in Auckland itself, you don't get a lot of waves in the city, maybe like a meter, on the big swells, a meter and a half. But then there's this other spot where Mark Jacobs, he posts a lot of videos. It's on the west coast, it's Mirawai, and you get some pretty insane big waves. You can't really surf them. Like they're too big, They're like 3-4 meters sometimes. Oh, wow. And, but as a result, again, you get flat water sections on high, mid tide, you get really nice flat water sections. So again, actually a lot of flat water. Yeah. So if you're willing to travel in New Zealand, man, you get some insane good, kite surf wave spots. Huh? Yeah. Mount Taranaki has them. Up north as well, Ahipara. Just some endless left-hander waves. Yeah, some really nice waves that you can also kite on. Yeah.
That is very nice. Cool.
But yeah, you get everything in New Zealand. Like, I kind of like that it's not like Brazil or Egypt where it's just like 20 knots every day. It's like you get 4 days of wind. Sometimes it's like, mostly it's 20 knots. Sometimes it's like 35, 40, in a big storm. But then it's again quiet for like 5 days, 7 days. You can, for me as an old guy, you can relax and recover, give yourself a bit of a break. I really enjoy New Zealand. Yeah. Yeah. It's an awesome place. Yeah.
Temperature wise. So go with the wetsuit.
Winter is 15 degrees.
Yeah.
So you go with a 4.3. Summer, it's like the air temperature 15. Summer is like 28. So you go in a short tee. The water always kind of stays a bit cold.
Yeah.
Sure. Not too cold, but you can't really go board shorts like other places in the world. Yeah.
All right.
It looks like the dream place where to live. And did you move there like for any specific reason in the first place?
Yeah. Because I learned. I mean, first of all, my dad's from New Zealand. He's Kiwi, although he lives in New Zealand. He lives in Switzerland. I grew up in Switzerland. So I always had the passport. I never actually planned to go to New Zealand to stay there, but I just knew. I started kiting when I was 12. it was so frustrating being in Switzerland as a young kid, just wanted to kite, you know, it was my dream to just be a kite pro basically, you know, but like you can only kite in winter, you can't kite, you know, in Zurich. And yeah. then in summer,
you cannot kite in Zurich either.
In summer, you can't. You need to drive 2.5 hours to Lake Silvana. And I didn't drive. So it was quite a frustrating time for me growing up. It's just like this fire inside me. It's like, I'm going to kite on a kite on a kite, but I couldn't kite. And I always knew I needed to leave Switzerland, man. It wasn't the place for me long term. And that's why I left. Yeah, when I did my apprenticeship, I did my work experience in the bank, you know, what my parents told me I need to do. And I was like, see you later, I'm out of here. And I traveled the world. I actually went to Hawaii because I really wanted to become a kite pro.
Yeah.
We're talking 2010. And I spent a lot of time in Hawaii. I even went, filmed some videos, had a meeting at the headquarters at Nash to get sponsored. And they liked me a lot. They said, look, we can give you some gear and stuff, you know. And you can film with, I think Sam Light was coming or something, but I ran out of money and I couldn't stay anymore. And I was like, I had to move on. So I thought, you know what, I'm not ready to go back to Switzerland. So I went to New Zealand and got a job there in the bank as well. And just tried to keep kiting there, but yeah, working full time. It was again like a little bit, couldn't kite as much as I wanted in the early stages. Yeah. Yeah.
But looking back, was it like an opportunity missed? Or, I mean, you're still doing pretty well. You kite a lot. Well, not now, but you usually kite a lot. You have a family. Yeah. Are you happy with how it turned out?
I'm happy. Of course I'm happy. Yeah, yeah. You know, but kind of this Instagram, like being a pro kiteboarder, I don't know if a lot of people have that dream, but that was certainly my dream. It felt like that at some stage I realized like, that's not going to happen anymore, you know? No. And that dream that died. And now I feel I have almost got the second chance with Instagram to be able to kind of be someone in the industry, you know? Yeah. And I've been enjoying that, you know? And a completely different way than I ever thought, you know? And I'm using my strengths, which is a humor, you know, and my kite skills. And it's a really cool journey I'm on at the moment. So I am happy. Yes.
Yep. That's perfect. How did your family react when you started producing these funny videos? Did they like them? Did they even watch them?
Man, my family wasn't surprised because they know me. Yeah. You know, they know I'm always a jokester. I'm always a guy who pulls jokes and pranks on everyone. I was just worried really about my work colleagues in the bank, my ex-team, you know? It's like I was a bank manager, man.
Everything was super finance, serious, yeah, during the day.
Suit on, you know, like hair comb. To like doing these silly videos, you know, that took a bit of a mental a hurdle that I had to cross. Yeah. Still now, sometimes when I post, I was like, oh, I don't know, like everyone will see that, you know, yeah, possibly. But yeah, that's more probably what.
But I mean, with the numbers you get now, I mean, they can't say anything.
That's the thing. That is the thing. You know, I'm kind of glad, yeah. and. Going back to that wetsuit video, which has now something over 2 million views, my best one. When I posted that, it was as not going anywhere. It had like a few thousand views, which was unusual for me. And I was about to pull it off. I was like, people don't like it. It's silly. It's not good, you know. And I really, it was for Friday night. I was like, I'm going to pull this video. I'm not going to leave this on. This is a silly video. I look stupid. You know, like all these things in my head.
Yeah.
And I just left it. And now it's the most popular video. And it's so funny what you say. It's like, well, once you have the views,
yeah,
you're like, oh, that's a great video, you know?
Yeah.
And so it kind of backs you up that it is a good video, yeah, you know? So, yeah, it's constantly
you
this.
You even had second thoughts. That's it. Absolutely. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
maybe as you pull other videos out, there would have been some nuggets there as well.
I don't know. Maybe. I try not to pull the videos anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But it's, I think a lot of people face that when they post stuff online, you know, it's like especially if you do like funny comedian stuff like that. It's a challenge, man. Still now. Yeah. It's still like, do I want to post this or not? Is it crossing the line or not?
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're doing like comedy online. So it's pretty much more or less the same feeling that you might have when you're doing like a stand-up comedy, you know? Probably, it's like you make a joke and nobody's laughing. So you say like, you feel like weird.
Yeah, and then like someone starts to laugh, then it's okay.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So I can give you guys an insight. when I upload a video, I always look at the first few minutes. I look the view to like ratio.
Yeah,
and if I get 5% of people liking my video that viewed it, then I know it's going to be a bomb. It's going to be a good one. Sometimes I even get 10% liking in the first few minutes. If I only get 2%, it's going to be an average video.
Yeah.
If I get 1% like, I pulled a video.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. This is not going to be a good one. So sometimes, you know, after 1,000 views, I get 1% likes. I was like, nah, that one needs to go.
Yeah. How long did your most popular one take until it skyrocketed?
Man, it's been so different. Eh? Like the wetsuit one, it took like maybe a month or so until it just suddenly went crazy.
That's a long time.
It's a long time, man. You know, and then other videos, they went pretty fast. You know, within a week, usually within a week, you have about 100,000 views, and then it just keeps on going.
Yeah, once it clicks, it clicks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question about the videos the video when you jumped off the boat and all these videos you did in this part, the one where you took the wrong suitcase.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. How much did that take you to do that, actually? I mean, it must have been, you must have had second thoughts before putting on that suit.
Funny enough, I posted that with a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Because I was like, that's a funny video.
It is funny.
But going into the store to buy the dress and the pink top, and I actually had to go into the changing rooms to see if it fits. You know? That was the most stressful part about it. And there were people looking, you know, and that's just, that was weird. Yeah. Yeah. That was the weirdest part about that video. Yeah. But I mean, like I saw a lot of people jump off a boat, you know, and I thought, I can't do that. I want to jump. It was a scary thing, man. It was like 13. It doesn't look so high in the video, but it was like 13 meters, I think.
Plus a lot of sharp things that you could eventually.
Yeah. Hit. Yeah. And so I was like, I wanted to do that stunt, but I don't want to just jump off a boat because we've seen that a million times, you know, everyone does that. Not everyone, but a lot of people. I was like, I'm going to jump off in a skirt.
Yeah. That is nice. That is so nice.
Yeah.
And then, was that you who kiteboarded on a Lego board? How was that constructed?
With the Legos in the living room there.
So did you place it on a board or did you glue those things together?
So I bought these 30 centimeters by 30 centimeters Lego plates.
Yep.
Spent $100 on them. It's quite expensive. just on these
more
plates.
Than a board.
Yeah, honestly, man. And I took like two nights with my son. We had to take all his Lego creations apart. Poor him. Oh, everything we had to break.
It's a family project.
And I still didn't quite have enough, you know, like Lego bricks. So I used even the smallest ones, you know, the ones with two on them. Even one I used, you know, just to kind of do it. And then because I saw this wakeboarder do it.
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do that, you know. And then after 2 days spending $100, I lifted the board up and it was like a banana. It's like, I was like, how did this guy do this? Because like, this is not going to work, you know.
Yeah.
It's not stable enough. It's going to break into a million pieces.
Sure.
And
then you have to pick it up.
My God. Yeah. And I mean, no one wants more plastic in the ocean.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, if I put another layer on top, like flat, I tried that, didn't work. Still was just not rigid enough. And then I was like, well, I could possibly glue every single piece, you know, which would take me another week or so. And it would completely, like my little boy wouldn't have any Legos left.
Plus it might still not work.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, I just cannot afford to do that. And then what I did at the end, I put a very tiny little wood board at the bottom of the Lego board, and I did glue the little wood board with the Lego board, and that was just enough to keep it in place. Yeah. So I did glue it. So it's kind of a little bit fake, but in a way I didn't want the plastic to go in the ocean. I wanted to play it safe. So I was like, it's a good sort of compromise.
All right.
And then I analyzed this guy's video, this wakeboarder video. Man, I spent like minutes.
Did you write to him?
I didn't actually. I should have. Yeah. But I was trying to analyze, has he got a little board at the bottom? And when you rewatch that video, you will never see the bottom of the board. Huh?
So yeah. It must be like that.
I think he did it the same way. So sorry to disappoint you. It wasn't completely legible.
That makes sense. Plus, what I think is really funny is that's probably why you did it, because of the stepping on Lego, because it hurts that much.
Yeah,
when you up. That's so cool. But so you brought the board finished to Egypt.
Yeah.
You didn't bring a bag of Legos and
I was finished. I just had to assemble the straps on it and that was it. Yeah. And I bought a surfboard as well. I bought a snowboard to the desert.
Skateboard.
A skateboard, which was really surprising that I got up on that one.
Were you overpowered?
Way over. Like I was 25, 30 knots on my 12, you know, and I was just hanging on to it basically. Yeah.
And then you brought the skirt. Do you bring more things you didn't roll out?
Yeah, I have a boogie board video. I tried on the boogie board. Funny enough, it didn't work because I didn't actually post that one because the boogie board broke. It was like a styrofoam. I do have some other videos still from this trip that I haven't posted just yet. But just a handful of
looking forward to more of these funny videos. And then you went to Fuerteventura as well, right?
Yes. Very frustrating because no wind.
Yeah. We were there in the fall of last year.
Yeah.
We were there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And actually me on the wing foil, I was able to wing for maybe altogether 1 hour. My dad, a windsurfer, he windsurfed for maybe 20 seconds. He actually planed.
In an entire 2 weeks?
In the entire 2 weeks.
See, this is painful, man.
Terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. I was at a very low point in Fuerteventura at the end of my stay because, like, when you don't get to kite a lot and you book this trip and you're so excited, you know, and then you're a week of just... I mean, I had once really just a session I could barely stay upwind, you know. And there's like, yes, yeah, painful, man. It's very painful.
But you were there on your twin tip, or did you bring your foil as well? Because that might have worked.
Yeah, that could have worked, actually. Yeah. But I didn't. That's in New Zealand, my foil. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And the thing is, like, you know, if you have a family, you can't really, you kind of need to balance. Everyone needs their times. You know, there's a schedule of sightseeing and stuff. Sure, like, sure. You kind of need to... go with the flow. And
so you go visit a place and then the wind starts and you're like...
Yeah, I mean, thankfully my wife is pretty supportive. Like if there is a day, like if there's an opportunity, she will just usually let me go. Because I think she has learned that if I don't go, it's an incredible... she gets an incredibly frustrated
Grumpy
husband for days. But a lot of that stuff, you know, like I think a lot of people can relate to this whole balance of like you have to work but it's windy, or you have other responsibilities with kids. Yeah. And so I try to bring that into my videos.
And it needs to be. I mean, thank you to my wife. She's not listening. I told you she doesn't have to listen. It's boring for her. But I'm super grateful that if there's a wind, she lets me go.
Yeah.
And we had Lucas on, Foil Only. I don't know if you've seen him. Or videos of him, but he's well. So he on the podcast, he thanked his wife for letting him go out on the water. So that's a recurrent theme. That's so super important.
You know, one thing I've discovered in New Zealand is that you can have a ghost session. You know what a ghost session is? So it's in summer.
Yeah.
If you go out in the early mornings, like 5:30. And you're back in the house around 7.
No one notices.
And you go straight from the car to the shower. And then if people wake up, it's just like nothing ever happened, you know? And then you just like, just remind the wife that tonight it's your turn to put the kids down. I'll go kiting, right? And so you get a second session.
Nice. All right. But on the other hand, I'm not sure if that was your video or another video I saw. Because when I go wing foiling, or now as I'm trying these... downwind sessions, I'm always late. I was like, I'm gonna go there for no. I think it was your video when you said just 5 more minutes.
So
that's what happens at the moment, because usually it would take me maybe 20 minutes to foil down the way that I go up with a train, 20 minutes down, But as I'm not on foil, it takes 1.5 hours. So
yeah,
that's how it is.
Where do you go usually?
We go from Saint-Blaise, Lake Neuchâtel. We take the train, and then we go up. It's super cool. Last time we were 7 downwind foilers with the paddle, with the whole gear set up on the train in our wetsuits. It was
that's so cool.
Really cool. And you go the entire lake?
No. I don't. Yet, hopefully. Yeah. No, just from Saint-Blaise to Neuchâtel, which is like 6-7 kilometers, maybe 5. I'm not sure.
On a windy day.
Yes, so westerly winds, and you get decent bumps actually. Last time I was out there, there was the lake police. I don't know how you call that. Who came and asked if I was okay because someone from a hotel saw me out there. Oh, and really? As I'm always falling in, they came. My favorite thing was, I'm even hot. It was end of December. I have a thick wetsuit and had to put water in because it was that hot. Paddling up was terrible.
Crazy.
But yes, that's. And it's
really, is really cool, the possibilities that the foil opened up, man.
Really?
Yeah. That's amazing, eh? Like, especially for people who live in not windy countries, like here, Switzerland, it opens up so many new water sport possibilities, eh? That is really cool.
And as there's no wind often, the pump foiling thing, amazing.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah.
Super cool. Well, I'm pretty much through. I mean, you told us so much about your awesome videos.
Plus you have to climb up now.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a 20-minute walk. I don't even know what it's called in English if you put the fur on the skis and walk up. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well,
whatever. I'm going to do that. Well, thank you, Aaron, very much.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to tell the audience? Anything that's about to come out, except for your app, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working in the background, behind the scenes. I have one thing I could show you guys.
Sure.
Yeah. Probably not. My wife, she's pretty good at drawing. Oh, wow. So we have created this memory game. So she did all the images herself.
So have a look at this.
With all the kind of kite things, you know, like we have the dark slide. all the kite tricks, toe side, all the stuff. Because we love to play memory games, and it's a good thing to do when it's not windy, you know, with the kids. So we designed this, and we're trying to manufacture it now and see what happens next year.
That is so cool. Yeah,
that's probably coming out. But,
and it's not a t-shirt.
No, it's not a t-shirt. That's the main thing.
That is so cool. And people are going to be able to order that from Instagram. And
yeah, I'll have a link on Instagram. Exactly.
That is so nice.
Yeah. So that's a sample a Chinese guy produced for us. Cost $250 to produce this.
just
one.
All right.
But the thing is, like, of course, when you order like a large quantity, like 500 or so, then the price drops quite a bit. So
that is really cool.
It affordable. Yeah. So
So you're gonna really be a professional creator and.
You know, that's my dream. It's my dream to. I had a dream of being a pro kiteboarder. Yeah. Now I see this as a second chance. I'm going to go with it and see what happens. Yeah.
That is amazing, man. That is super cool. Thank you so much for having us learn about your projects. It's really interesting.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome being on the show.
Cool. Thank you.
Cool. Bye.
All right. Bye.
See ya.